And welcome to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. Are you dabbing?
I'm not dabbing.
Okay, good. Because I'm like, did you just dab?
I'm doing the Randy Macho Man, oh yeah, kind of dynamic pose.
Oh, it's pretty close to dabbing.
Well, it predates dabbing by like 25 years, so you can get over it. Also, they do that a lot in the anime, whenever they want to indicate that they're like powerful. You
know, radio's an auditory medium. Nobody knows these hand motions, but it does look, for the audience's sake, a lot like dabbing.
No, dabbing, you have to tuck your head into your elbow.
Really, millennials have been practicing coughing etiquette for the last
by dabbing. Yeah. If you're doing the Randy Macho Man, you have to look at the tip of your finger. You're not dabbing.
You're looking up, not down.
You're looking up.
So,
yeah.
You know what? If I'm in public and I need to cough or sneeze, I'm now gonna dab.
You should.
The dab sneeze, or the dab cough, it needs to be what happens
let's
next.
Let's say hello to the audience.
Hello, audience.
Hello, audience.
thank you for joining us.
And I'm Sebastian.
And you're Sebastian, and I'm Luke Smith. And wow, what a week it's been. What a week. We're one of the very few radio shows that is still producing weekly content.
Well, I mean, and even then, it's a bit of a struggle. There's not much news other than everything's
canceled.
Well,
no, but like a lot of LGBT shows around the country have switched to their archives. Because people can't physically make the radio shows.
Oh.
So like I said, we're one of the only current affairs show left. Nearly everyone is talking COVID-19. The amount of, news that's gone from talking about your sports and your this, that, and the other to talking COVID-19 is,
And there's
and rightly so.
There's a few relevant stories as well. So things like the high-risk groups, for example. If you have a history of smoking, they've recently started looking into whether or not vaping puts you into a high-risk category. Mm-hmm. Turns out it depends on what brand you smoked. And very few people were truly brand loyal. They would just, like, get whatever was on sale.
Yeah.
So chances are, if you used to vape, then you are split the difference between no smoking at all and smoking, but you are in a higher risk category. And both of those, smoking and vaping, are very common in the LGBT community.
Yeah, we disproportionately smoke and or vape.
Yeah. Also, drinking alcohol. Turns out a small amount of alcohol is good for your immune system, but if you drink enough to get a hangover, you've had enough to make you...
You've gone too far.
You've gone too far. You're immunocompromised now. But only a little bit.
It'll... You know, I want to interject quickly.
Okay,
it's so unlike me, isn't it?
Oh my!
I know, really uncharacteristic. But I want to interject because I got frightened this week. I was actually scared.
Was it a bug?
No. Somebody didn't like jump out behind the bush and go boo. Oh. In which case, social distancing, don't do that. But no, I actually got a bit scared, and my partner Jake was also freaking out because we're based here in Ontario.
Yeah.
And the province of Ontario released their estimates. And, we've been following this. Like, I started working from home March 5th or something. So it's been almost a month that I have been working remotely.
Yeah.
I am incredibly lucky. I am very, very lucky to be able to continue my work at home. And likewise for yourself. You're also still working from home. Many, many other people aren't in this position. So, our heart goes out to them. But I definitely got a bit frightened recently because, it is pretty scary when you think about the scale and the scope and the intensity of COVID-19.
Well, this is history changing. This is something that I brought up some time ago with my roommate, who's one of three people that I see in person anymore.
It's me and Jake, the other one.
Yeah. And just the idea, there are people, basically, if you're like 35-ish and under, you don't remember the world before 9/11. Mm. And I am just barely old enough to remember the fall of the Berlin Wall. I was a small child in primary school, and I remember my teacher, my English class teacher, because it was in a French-English, French immersion, and the English teacher, she did a very bad job of explaining what happened and why we should care. But still, the point being that, if you were alive at the time, there is a line in the sand. the day before the Berlin Wall fell and the day after the Berlin Wall fell were different days. Not just normal different days, but like...
the world had seismically shifted.
Fundamentally changed in a very big way. Same thing with 9/11. Everything completely changed. This is basically what's happening now. And there's a lot of...
I want to quickly apologize to our listeners. We have fire engines going where we're recording.
Yeah, I was woken up by like 10 of them just blasting by my house. I'm on a major street.
Yeah.
But I also sleep with the window open, so that's kind of my own fault. But there's a lot of younger people who are not familiar with these like shifts in history. Same thing with...
Gen Z.
Yeah.
The Zoomers, as they're called. And a lot of people are like, those millennials hanging out in parks... to which every millennial is like, we're all in our late 20s. Like, you know, that's, you know, mid to late 20s, early 30s, that's millennials.
Wrong generation there, buddy.
We're currently at home freaking out in sweatpants eating ramen. Like, that's where we're at.
Yeah.
It's the Zoomers and, weirdly enough, the Boomers who are out there in parks and things. It was, but the millennials are really freaking out. But the Zoomers have never had this. So we're talking like... teenagers, the next generation.
Because millennials, even the youngest millennials, are just old enough to have a vague memory of the world before 9/11.
So
the idea of having a major shift that, like, this is not just, you know, 2 months of staying indoors and everything goes back.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to go back. It's going to be a brave new world, and hopefully not an actual brave new world.
And it got me thinking that for many people, I feel like we're all living in the middle of a movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for some people, the movie we're living in is sort of World War Z. Are we going to get through the pandemic? It's a slow action thriller where, you know, we're at the start of the movie, things are broken loose, and we'll fumble through and survive to the end.
Mm-hmm.
That's the movie that some of us are going to be living for the next couple of months.
Yeah.
For some of us, it's a family drama where we're all locked in the same house. You could be locked in with abusive parents.
Yeah.
Or with an abusive partner.
I was actually thinking recently that somewhere out there, there's a kid who was about to come out, and then after this, it's just like, I'm going to have to wait for 2 years.
Yeah, exactly. So for some people, that's their movie that they're living in right now. And then for some people, it's a movie where somebody that they love dearly passes away.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the movie where someone's death becomes a tiny element of a number reported.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be some people's movie on this. And I wanted to talk about this because for LGBT people, it breaks my heart in all three of these scenarios.
Okay.
Because in the first scenario, this kind of survivalist mentality, you know, LGBT homeless people are so disproportionate.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the kind of survival thriller is so much more difficult if you've been ostracized by your family, if you have been made homeless through addiction as a result of dealing with bullying as a child or what have you, or early childhood abuse. So, you know, for LGBT folks, that kind of movie is quite terrifying. And then the family drama movie, for many people, that's a very difficult situation to be in, being cooped up with you know, people that close to you.
Oh, for sure.
They're expecting family violence rates to, you know, really, really go. Because, you know, normally you'd have haircuts, you'd have grocery shopping, you'd have the school run, all these little breaks, these little escapes from each other, and they're not there now. And then you also have the other movie where, you know, it makes me think of a movie where you're a dancer, you decide to go into nursing, you know, you're happy to help people, you catch the virus, and then you pass away, which is exactly what happened to a young man in New York. And we just have to look forward. And I want to reassure people that, you know, all of these scenarios are realities that people are going to have to live through. But I want them to know that at the other end of this, looking back, you know, there are going to be resources to help. There's always that moment in a movie where, you know, someone finds a, you know, the right person to talk to, or someone swoops in to save the day or what have you, you know. And I think I want to tell people that in reality, these things exist. There are financial supports. There are phone lines that you can call to help. There are police departments who are eager and very much aware of the domestic violence situations that are existing. You know, And there's people who are looking and hoping to help homeless people. Mm-hmm. So even though all of these scenarios are dire and tragic, and will be very difficult for people to pass through, in terms of that experience, you know, there are these resources available.
Well, I know that in major metropolitan centers, there are the banks are sort of looking at all of the empty housing in Canada where this is... It's one of those things where this is 100% true, but the degree to it depends on whether or not you're getting tinfoil hat or not. Mm-hmm. That Canadian property has been used as stock chips by foreign investors. And that people around the world have been buying Canadian property as an investment and not as housing arrangements. Now, if you're talking about the degree of scale, the upper end of the scale, you're getting into the weirdos who are sort of like, you know, QAnon, deep web conspiracy theorists. And on the lighter end, you say it's a mild problem, but it's mostly in Vancouver and Toronto.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of empty apartments, and they actually think that a lot of them are going to get freed up over the next few months. So the number if you're worried you're going to have nowhere to go to, that might change soon. That empty apartment. And this is just, I know people in the banking world who are telling me that they're predicting that...
Well, there was an interesting story that came out where apparently Airbnb has asked the federal government to help bail out Airbnb hosts. Now, people have this idea of Airbnb hosts being, you know, I've got a spare room. You know, I myself have done this. You know, got a spare room, I'll help you out. But there is, I think, the actual majority of successful Canadian Airbnbs were property investors that just had large portfolios of multiple properties, sort of real estate companies that hold them. And
they're like lazy bed and breakfasts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But they're holding onto vast numbers of properties just for the Airbnb market. And people are thinking, you know what? If we swoop in and save these multi-property holding companies, which are really have affected the amount of rental properties available. They've affected the amount of, you know, really just the housing stock has been affected by this.
Well, it's like there are studies showing that people can't live in Madrid or in Venice because Airbnb was choking out the residents.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a, I don't know, it's sort of an interesting scenario where we now find all of these big real estate holding companies with all their Airbnb properties.
Yeah, empty.
Completely empty. And they may need to divest of these properties.
Yeah.
You know, filling up these local communities with new home buys.
Yeah.
Or rental properties by local people who actually put them in.
And you could squeeze six people into one of those houses to sort of live as a... To work as sort of an impromptu shelter. And on the one hand, six new people in these days would be considered risky. But if those turn into the only six people that you ever see anymore, then, you know, it works out.
When it comes to, you know, the homeless, you know, we know that the biggest cities in the country have been converting community centers. They have been renting out hotels and motels because, of course, they're all empty right now. Mm. And, you know, the big cities in this country have been taking really significant efforts to house the homeless during this crisis.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, and that's reassuring.
Yeah. Yes. So here's my latest little drama is, as you No, and I, as the audience might remember, I actually have a major fatigue disorder. And then every time the seasons shift like this, it gets really bad. So I've just been sleeping a whole lot. So the movie that I'm in is some late career drama starring Bill Murray, where he's trying to figure out what to do with his life, even though he's struggling through ... Depends on the Bill Murray movie. Mm-hmm. But like, he's peppy and optimistic, but also morose.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I don't know if I would watch that.
You've never seen Steve Zissou or Lost in Translation?
No, but I did watch The Dead Don't Die recently, and it was really funny in that.
Oh, well, I mean, that's Bill Murray as,
Yeah, I think that's just Bill Murray as Bill Murray.
The fact that he's still working is a good sign, because, like, Chevy Chase isn't working anymore because people do not want to share a set with the man. Mm. Yeah.
So, we're going to jump to our first song. This is... Say My Name by Kings of Our Kin. K-I-N, Kings of Akin.
Yes.
And this is one of the tracks that we found on the Earshot Digital Distribution System. So if you are an LGBT musician, go to Earshot, as in thing on the side of your head, SHOT-distro, D-I-S-T-R-O, .ca, and get your content up there, because we're looking every week to get new Canadian musicians. And we're really keen to get, and it's even if it's a
news week with nothing but COVID news.
Yeah, I am determined for the time being to only play Canadian musicians.
Yeah, yeah.
I am a little affronted by Trump's no masks for Canada decision. So I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna give all the airtime I can to Canadian musicians. So
I mean, all of their paper comes from our wood.
Yeah, that's true. If they turn off their paper, their toilet roll shortage be quite real.
There's a little tit for tat here that should probably be taken seriously.
Yeah. Just think of the toilet roll, Trump. Anyway, we will be right back right after this. To CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And I apologize for my weird movie metaphor earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, what was that?
Yeah.
But for me, I wanted to talk about this metaphor because I know that for many of our listeners, you know, that they're looking down the barrel of a very tumultuous couple of months.
Mm.
And I think that if we sort of almost disassociate in a way, it may help some folks to get through. Now, I want to talk about a subreddit thread, and I don't want to be that guy that creates media news stories over so-and-so said such a thing on the subreddit.
Oh, my God.
But what I think it is actually a really interesting example of what we refer to as the prison gay phenomena.
Well, yeah. I mean, from now on, just bear in mind that, like, Reddit is a good conversation starter.
Yeah, it's like Whisper.
Sort of like how really good academics say there is no shame whatsoever with starting with Wikipedia. Stop looking down your nose at Wikipedia. It's fine to start there. Just mm-hmm. don't end there.
Yes.
Go on to real literature. Mm-hmm. So Reddit is, but yeah, yeah. So I know what this story is and where it's going. Tell
us. So there was a straight gentleman, someone who self-identifies as straight. He actually has the same thing as you. He has an extreme fatigue disorder.
Okay, yeah.
So normally he works from home. And sometimes he has to take naps in the middle of the day because, you know, of his fatigue. Mm. You know, and that is what it is. Mm-hmm. His roommate, who is bi, usually goes to work every day. Now they've been quarantined.
Yeah.
So they're stuck at the house. So, you know, straight guy, fatigue, falls asleep, wakes up. A roommate has put a nice blanket on him because it's cold in the living room.
Aww.
Which is kind of adorable. You know, this happens a few times through different days. And then, you know, straight guy's falling asleep, roommate puts a blanket on him, little kiss on the head, you know. Maybe roommate is playing video games whilst straight guy is falling asleep and then just, like, you know, curls his hair or whatever. Just little gestures of affection.
Okay.
And the guy who posted, this straight guy, essentially asked the question of, like...
Are these actual examples of stuff that happened?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And the straight guy is like, you know what? I really like it. You know, it's really comforting and nice when someone tucks you in with a blanket.
Okay,
you know?
Yeah.
It's really quite nice when someone gives you a little peck on the, you know, on the head when they think you're, you know, dozing off. Mm-hmm. You know, those are sweet, sweet things to do. Nice little affectionate things. And now he's having a crisis of sexuality. He's like, oh my God, am I now gay? Because, you know, I got tucked in. And he's like, now I'm pretending to sleep because, you know, the affection is so nice. And this actually kind of links back to my random aside about the movie Onward, where how men interact with each other and display affection and how those relationships exist is becoming a lot more complex. Like, you can be straight and enjoy a cuddle with another.
Well, I think it's more apt to say that we're returning to baseline. So if we were to look at the big arc of history, the Marquis de Queensbury really messed up Western society, that we can trace back. Like, I don't want to say
that guy.
All of Western toxic masculinity traces back to one guy.
That Marquis de Sainsbury. But about even the grocery store's
80%
awful.
Of it. No, it's Queensbury.
Oh, not
as
Sainsbury.
In Queensbury rules. The guy who formalized classic pugilism into modern boxing.
Yes.
Is the same guy that sent Oscar Wilde to prison.
Ah, yes.
Because it was the Marquis de Queensbury.
His son, wasn't it?
His nephew.
Oh, nephew, close enough.
So the Marquis de Queensbury obviously was this ultra masculine kind of character. And before then, like, famously, you can go online right now and just look at, on Google image search, pictures of cowboys who are just like cuddling with their friends. So you see like these banditos and they're all there and they've got the I can't remember what they're called, the belts that are made out of bullets. Mm. And they're wearing that and they got the shotgun and they got their best friend on their lap and they're all just dudes hanging out and like draped all over each other.
Well, it gets cold. Well, you know, it's like, you
partly
know.
It's that, but partly like male affection, that's what it looked like for most of history. And if, like, multiple times I've been to other countries and I have friends who are just, like, alarmed by, like, when I lived in Hong Kong and all the Cantonese guys would, like, hold hands in public. And 90% it was so that you don't lose each other in the crowd because there's a big crowd. But it's also, like, there's just nothing wrong with being affectionate like that. And I think some of it is just the fear of going to prison for... well, it started off as the fear of going to prison for... being affectionate to your male friend.
You've got
public.
Like the McCarthy witch hunts in the Cold War.
There's this history starting in sort of like around the 1880s, going up until the end of McCarthyism, which McCarthyism kind of faded out. So we'll say 1970 just to give it a number, although that's very debatable.
Well, in the 80s, we start seeing decriminalizations happen, so it's not a bad number.
And, you know, you get the new romantics and you get new wave and you get, like, you know, a gender-bending sexuality, David Bowie, that sort of thing. So you have this 100-year period where male friendship had to be done with social distancing in effect.
Yes.
For fear.
You'd go drinking with your buddies, but you had to be 3 feet away. You know, exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. So a lot of this is just sort of society shaking off this 100-year-old tragedy, really, of Oscar Wilde going to prison because he had sex with the wrong dude's nephew.
Mm-hmm. But I think it's really interesting because we're now seeing in the last 10 years or so a major push for not just gay people being affectionate with other gay men, and you know, their partners. That's something that the, you know, the gay rights movement started to nail down really 90s, early 2000s. Mm-hmm. You know, we really managed to get past that. But now this is sort of opening up to the rest of the world, you know, the rest of, you know, the straight world. And
well, this brings us back to Kinsey. And if we're going to look at Kinsey, because Kinsey studied this, so a lot of people like to cite 1 in 10. Like, 1 in 10 people are gay. Yes. And if you've met people, you'd be like, that feels high. Is that right? That feels high.
For me, I think that's low, but, you know. I meet a lot of gay people, though, so.
Yeah, well, that's know. All you need.
Perspective bias.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about people you went to high school with, because that is the best cross-section mix that you don't select your company. So, about 1 in 10, that still feels a bit high for high school. And the way that Kinsey came up with that number was because he had to study a sitting male population that he could do 2-hour interviews with
on the regular.
It was the Navy and prison. So the very high numbers that he found, because the original number that he found was 1 in 5, and he scaled that back to 1 in 10 because he thought that was a bit high. And it was because when you have an all male population with no outlet, some people are willing to get creative.
Yeah, and I think that's you've circled back to my point here as well. You know, with the coronavirus and these lockdowns, with roommates and families, you know, normally we would be able to get affection from your girlfriend you know, so and so across town or what have you. But now a lot of Canadians are going to be starved of that normal affection that they would usually get, you know, over their, you know, their normal week or month. You know, sometimes it's nice to go, like, I like to go to the barber lady, who's very chatty. She's the only woman in this barber, big blonde hair.
Okay.
And,
like Jake's Dolly Parton, like, big blonde hair?
Yeah, almost.
Oh, wow.
And, she's like, and we just gossip, and I enjoy that. I enjoy the sort of tepid gossip.
Okay.
But it's about that human connection, that affection, even though it's a bit full with
I get my hair cut by an angry bear.
You do get your, yeah, by angry people. You like angry haircuts.
He's an angry bear who hates kids. It's kind of funny listening to him. He's a little bit bigoted, but in a way that's like comedic, because, you know, he would never do anything about it. But it's just listening. It's like listening to a crotchety old man yell, "Get off my lawn," but in a way that's just so over the top, it's entertaining. Yeah. It's a lot of people are going through this, questioning their sexuality. But like, this is one of the reasons why Kinsey actually reframed everything to say, we're only looking at people. When he studied the gay sexuality, it was only people aged 25 and up, because young people are in weird circumstances and they...
Yeah, still exploring who you are.
They're still exploring who they are. So 25 and up, and they're in an environment where they could play the field, basically. That you're gay if you have choices to not be gay. Because if you're in a situation, as they said in World War II, any port or storm, if you're not in that situation and you're still going to go for men, then he's like, you're at least bisexual in that context. But like, prison gay is a different kind of gay.
Yeah, and prison gay is sort of it's a bit of a crude metaphor.
It is,
And it really refers to the higher rates of reported homosexuality in prisons. And that is literally what you're saying. It's about there. It's for a lack of better options.
Yeah.
Not to say that there aren't actually gay people in prison. But there was an interesting...
There's actually a disproportionate number.
But there was due to other reasons.
Due to other reasons, but
there was an interesting study about sort of the theories behind homosexual. A lot of people know Alfred Kinsey, and if you've seen the series Master of Sex, I think where I want to say Sean Penn is the actor in it, or the Welsh guy, but I can't remember his name.
The Welsh guy. They also made a
with
movie.
Big curly hair. I really like him. He's That's very like Welsh.
Half of Welsh guys have big curly hair.
Big curly hair.
Tom Jones. It was Tom Jones.
No, well, it wasn't Tom Jones. Well, anyway, you know, in The Master of Sex, you kind of get a sense of that. But, you know, I think this guy's post on Reddit is, a lot of people are going to be able to identify that, you know, who are sitting at home with roommates.
Yeah.
have a cuddle. You know, take 5 minutes, have a cuddle. It releases endorphins that make you feel better. And honestly, right now, we could all do with some of those feel better endorphins. It doesn't mean you're gay.
No.
It doesn't mean that your whole world has gone and turned upside down.
Yeah.
You know, you're not the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Like, this is this is just, you know, and maybe this is your moment of self-actualization. Maybe this is, you know that turning point in your movie. But for a lot of Canadians, you know, lack of options means that you need to make do with what you have. And that includes human intimacy.
Yeah.
You know, you're not having a crisis of sexuality just because you want to cuddle with your roommate.
Yeah.
Like, it's okay.
Well, I mean, some people might be having a crisis of sexuality because of that, but it's... just be chill.
Yeah, be chill. You know, this week's show is brought to you by... It's fine. Relax. You'll be okay.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to be okay.
Yeah.
You know, take a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, some of you not so much, but you know, broadly speaking, we're gonna be okay. Absolutely. Well, let's jump to a song after that. We're gonna be playing "Holograms" by Future Womb.
Future Womb, I see.
Yeah, I actually we played one of their tracks before by Future Womb.
We
Based out of Montreal.
That was 2 weeks ago, I think.
No, it was longer than that. It was a couple of months. Okay. But yes, big fan of Future Womb, and like I said, if you're an LGBT musician, go to earshot-distro.ca, get your content up there. We are very keen to play more Canadian LGBT music. Or let us know at Tarkanqueer. We will be back right after this.
In a broken city, starship's pace, phone booth confessions, and friendship dates. Here's an invitation, climb inside my mind, to fall back in neutral, at a green light, go, 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 in love you give me tunnel vision. I can't see him shake the way you hold my eyes and all the grass. Wanna groove on those luscious lips and ride this wavelength straight on to morning. Let's again. Spend sunrise bedtimes in soft steel boxes. Ooh. Steal my lips, mid-block, mid-sentence. Slip it.
Hello and welcome back to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is still Luke Smith.
And I persist as Sebastian.
You are resiliently Sebastian, despite all efforts to the contrary.
It's true.
You remain Sebastian.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Now, we have an idea.
I'm an immovable rock.
You are, an unstoppable bus. Train. No, it's train, isn't it? An unstoppable bus. We have an idea that we want to share with our audience. We are getting on the Zoom bandwagon. Uh-huh. It is a huge bandwagon because everyone is Zooming around all over the place right now. And our idea for our fantastic listeners out there is, you know, we've been talking up a storm about Eurovision. We don't stop talking about Eurovision. Actually, you need to gag me sometimes because how much I talk about Eurovision. Big fan. Big fan.
I was reminded recently. Actually, I was going through Little Big's catalog.
Okay, yeah.
You know their song Skippy Dibby?
Yes.
You know they re-released it as an 80s remix? And it's like a new romantic remix. And there's this wonderful part where he's riding a unicorn who's surfing and then on a plane, and it's just, it's art. It's absolute, the huge hair and the...
And Skibidibidi and Little Big are the Russian entry to Eurovision.
They could have won. People love Skibidibidi.
Now,
so disappointing.
So the plan for our listeners,
yes,
is we will be holding a Eurovision party. And you're invited.
Mm-hmm.
Not you, Sebastian. I'm looking at you, but I'm talking to you, listener on other end of headphone and or radio receptor.
You're looking at me because you're probably going to make me cook.
For the party?
Yeah.
For all of our listeners? but no, yes, we will be sending out the Zoom details next week and making it available on our social media. We're inviting all of our friends to come and participate. We will be streaming an older year of Eurovision because, of course, Eurovision was cancelled this year. We will pick one that we are quite fond of, a good vintage year of Eurovision.
If we do 2011, that'll be the year Moldova did the epic sax guy.
Was it that far away?
It's 2011, yeah.
Oh, we'll
have it was to either 2011 or 2010.
We'll have to look it up. But we'll pick a year. We'll share the Zoom details. And we want you to come and join us for a CanQueer Eurovision party. And you'll all get to experience the joyful fandom that we often
share. Maybe between now and then, one of us will get clippers so that we can actually have a haircut.
Oh, man. You're looking at my hair, aren't you? It's just such a mess right now. Actually, Jonathan Van Ness from Queer Eye has pleaded with people to stop doing home haircuts because some of them are travesties.
It's definitely going to make a fashion shift because now that people are cutting their own hair, and the great thing about being a dude is you can just clip your hair.
Yeah.
And there actually are studies that show that clean shaven actually has a lower rate of infection when it comes to respiratory diseases because facial hair can trap bacteria.
Yeah.
Not viruses, bacteria. But, you know, whatever. So shaved and buzzed head. So like the late 90s, like Ewan McGregor train spotting.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah,
it's going to come back.
We're all going to look like train spotting, which is, you know, kind of grim. I reckon we should bring back the bowl cut just for novelty. You know, when like...
Like monkeys? Like no. How far back are we going?
Like my mother used to do it and my aunt used to cut hair. She was actually a dog groomer. But she would do various family members. Well, you put a bowl on the head and you just trim around the side.
Like the skinny kid from Stranger Things.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. We should all bring back the bowl cut.
Can we not?
No. You're not a fan of this?
I'd rather shave my head.
Yeah. Maybe we should just, you know, trim around the ears. Also, who are you impressing? Except for your Zoom dates, obviously. That's
you could wear a hat.
That's true. Yes. We should all wear hats during Zoom.
I'll wear an Ushanka.
I don't know what that
is. That's the Russian hat with the ear flaps.
Okay. Yeah. That will effectively hide your hair.
Yeah. I have a rabbit skin Ushanka, which I only wear when it's like minus a billion.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we live in Ottawa, so that happens at least twice a year.
Yeah. So let us know, do you want to join us for our Eurovision viewing party in a week or so? Tweet us at TalkCanQueer, and you can find us on the Book of Faces with the same one. Now, I think, well, first of all, news. Right. Tehran applied, cancelled.
Obviously.
Really not that shocking.
Yeah.
They did eventually make that decision. Nobody's particularly surprised. It was in... they take the whole gosh damn month of June.
I mean, it's a pretty good way of avoiding all the controversy they've been in on for the past
year. Yeah, yeah. Actually, I think didn't Olivia Nwama resign or get fired?
She stepped down, yeah.
I don't know who their new executive director
was. In the way that it was reported, it was ambiguous even then as to whether or not she was kicked out, stepped down, was strongly recommended. It was really kind of a blend.
Very vague, yeah. So, a lot of these prides live and die one year to the next.
Yeah.
They're the equivalent of living paycheck to paycheck.
Oh, do you read the Beaverton?
No, I haven't.
Beaverton had a wonderful article about how corporate sponsors won't know how to survive without being able to capitalize on Pride this year.
Actually,
look at the actual headline. Keep talking. I'm going to find
aside,
it.
The Glante bookstore, which is one of the country's longest running LGBT bookstores in Toronto, kind of saw the writing on the wall sort of March 11th-ish when they had an event. They were expecting 200 and like 30 odd people showed up according to reporting on it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, you know what, this is not a good sign. So they started their Glad Day fund to really address this dip. And they have raised over 150,000 people, $150,000 already in this fund. We've mentioned it a couple of times. And they're giving little micro grants of $100 or $200 to people, you know, to pay for cell phone bills, to pay for medical bills, really looking at LGBT people in the Toronto area nationwide. They're getting a lot of racialized LGBT writers. So you found the article and it's corporations disappointed they won't be able to commodify queer culture this year, which is kind of hilarious. Actually, Absolute Vodka, which is a very common Pride sponsor, gave $20,000 to this Glad Day fund, which has now reached about $150,000. You should look it up.
Mm.
They are supporting LGBT people across the country.
Yeah.
Typically those who are really the most in dire need of it.
And here's the thing about Pride as well, because I was thinking about this recently, that when a lot of this sort of social distancing, pseudo-lockdown ends, it literally cannot last forever.
No.
5 years at the most, which a lot of people might freak out at the idea of 5 years, but like I'm really talking about like 5 years at the most. When it all ends, let's be honest, there's not going to be a lot of spare change available for festival funding in general, let alone Pride Festival, at least not the kind of Pride Festival that can support several million attendees. It will return back to the sort of family picnic structure that it had in the 90s. Guaranteed. Like the future of Pride Festivals is going to change. Even if only for a couple years for the economy to bounce back.
Yeah.
I can also guarantee that people are going to try to make it into a big thing again. But the amount of funding on the table has got to be limited. Just because like everyone is, you know, they're sort of, you know, shoring up their financial defenses, so to speak.
So the Interpride, which is sort of the UN of prides, is maybe the best way of thinking of it. It's sort of the global organization. And Europride, which is the European Association of Prides.
It's on the tin.
And then Fierté Canada Pride, which is, of course, Canada is like 1 in 10 pride festivals for the whole world.
Fierté Canada Pride probably oversees as many pride festivals
as Europe Pride. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So these three organizations have come together and they've decided, I think June 27th, that they are going to have a global pride. And the idea is that local organizations, so if you're in Montreal, maybe Montreal will do this. Or if you're in Thunder Bay, maybe Thunder Bay would take the lead and they would live stream local speakers, or for the global effort, it would be really high, influential LGBT rights speakers and so on, giving sort of TED Talks, I would imagine, about various things.
That's what I was thinking.
And then in addition, LGBT musicians, and they're talking about creating a digital experience. And you know what? I am all for it. Because marching down the street very much has its place.
Oh, yeah.
And when we're thinking about, you know, this week Singapore struck down the appeal against the gay sex ban there in Singapore,
mm-hmm.
you know, there is still a huge fight around the world to go on.
Yeah.
But in, you know, in Montreal or in Thunder Bay, like I said, marching down the street isn't as important, I don't think, as building community. You know, yeah. showcasing who yeah. we are, showcasing our talents, showcasing our talented musicians, sharing our experiences mm-hmm. through these speakers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this digital effort for Global Pride will do far more to bring the Pride movement back to that fundamental core than we would ever have seen. This is a really good factory reset
sort of
on Pride.
Bottom-up grassroots.
Absolutely.
Pride is just going to be a series of Discord channels.
Yeah, yes.
At this rate.
Pride brought to you by Slack.
Yeah.
But I think this is a great thing because it is about getting LGBT people into creating a community.
Mm.
And right now, physical community gathering is not really an option. But being able to feel connected yeah. to people in your own community, in your national community, in your global community,
yeah.
I think that this is going to be a really innovative, creative way of doing that.
It also is really good because something we've been talking about on and off, because it's hard to talk about it without sounding really conservative or tinfoil hatty, but there is a problem in the community with gatekeeping and with elitism, and a lot of the Pride events that you and I have been to over the years, you read the description of event, it sounds really good, and you go there, and it's just awkward as hell. It's mm-hmm. really preachy in a wrong way, where they're preaching to a bunch of people who spent $15 a ticket about the importance of acceptance, and it's just like, who are you talking to? Everyone yeah. in the room is on board. What are you yeah, doing?
This is the choir. Hello, welcome.
Hi! So, yeah. Having events that are actually organized by the community, for the community, without gatekeeping and without sort of this elitism angle to it where it's...
I mean, I think this would probably still happen. Who gets to choose who the speakers are, etc. But I think yeah. that with everything happening on the same day, if you have someone speaking from your local community and maybe you're not that interested,
yeah.
you can tune in and see what's happening in, you know, Milwaukee. Or wherever, you know, because everyone will be doing it at the same time.
Milwaukee's a bad example. There's some bad
news. I don't know why Milwaukee jumped to mind. But, but it's all about an opportunity to kind of share that sense of community.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about it because I think this is a really cool silver lining on what is otherwise a very depressing time that we live in.
There's a bunch of bad things that are on the way out. So a lot of people are pretty convinced that Hollywood, as we know it, is going to tank. They just can't sustain. Disney is asking for a bailout.
Like the theme parks?
Yeah, like Disney, the corporation. Like it's astounding. And the number of people I've spoken to are afraid about the future of cinema, and it's like, no.
Gay cruises. Oh my God.
Movies will always be made. Like
TV consumption and movie consumption right now is through the roof.
Well, and not just that, but like, even if Hollywood as the institution does die, and let's be honest, it's a kick and while it's down situation. So, you know, after Cosby and Weinstein, and then after the Oscars where Ricky Gervais really pounded.
Oh, yeah.
Really pounded the audience. And then now this, and people are just totally uninterested. And then over the past couple weeks, having all these celebrities who clearly have vanity issues going online and they're upset that they're not the center of attention anymore.
So before we go, because we've just about run out of time, we had a story that we brought to listeners a little while ago around the Marvel snowflake.
Oh, man.
And you have a bit of an update on that.
Yeah, so the guy who wrote it...
So just quick recap. Oh. There was a new... you just do a quick recap.
So there is a comic series, because Marvel has... dozens and dozens and dozens of
throws of series, yeah.
So one of them is called The New Warriors, and they recently rebooted with a series of new characters, including characters with names like Snowflake, Safe Space, Trailblazer, And the vampire one with B negative, that's it. He's a goth vampire called B negative,
which like is the blood. Yeah.
Deeply uncreative. But the guy who wrote it actually, in a series of tweets, revealed that he generated those characters specifically to tee off his readers. That it was he created these characters in order to prove that comic book consumers are homophobic, sexist, racist, etc. And that it was just there to infuriate the usual critics.
I mean, that seems like a very vapid reason to create a character.
It is, and also a lot of people are looking at it, like, even straight people who are not involved in queer politics are looking at that as queer baiting, that he created these characters in order to queer bait the audience.
So they weren't made LGBT because that's the story he wanted to tell.
Yeah.
They were made LGBT just to cause a reaction.
Just to cause a reaction and just to sell comics to a specific audience. Now, I took the time to look this up. I'm not going to read everything, obviously. I looked up on one of the various fan sites, and they had compiled a list of all the known LGBT characters. Like actual,
written because that's their story.
In Marvel. Yeah. Okay. I found there's 257.
Isn't one of them Canadian?
A few of them are, yeah. 257 of them are gay.
Wow.
59 of them are bi. 3 of them are pansexual, including Deadpool. And then I found that there's 9 trans characters as well.
Wow.
Now, some of these are known. So every so often, they'll fracture the universe. So Thanos with the snap also created multiple universes. There's a whole bunch of stuff with time travel. There's about 9 different versions of X-Men with different timelines and their alternate universes.
Yeah.
So when I say some but not all, that's what I'm talking about, some of the universes. Okay, yeah. So famous ones, Iceman. Mm-hmm. You've probably seen Iceman, and he like shoots ice down and like flies through the air on that trail. He's gay in some but not all universe. Colossus, the guy who turns into steel, he's gay in some but not all universes. Deadpool is pansexual in all of them. Valkyrie is bisexual or lesbian in all of them.
Valkyrie was supposed to be in the next Thor movie, which just got postponed because of COVID. So, yeah.
And this is just Marvel.
Yeah.
These numbers. And these characters were not made LGBT out of cynicism. It was like when they made Northstar gay, they just wanted to tell a story.
Yeah.
And this was in the 90s when it was still unpopular to tell a story like that. And this is not getting into DC characters, Dark Horse characters, Image Comics characters. Like, there is a rich history, and every time people are like, oh, it's the first gay character, it's like, what are you reading? Yeah. So I don't know. It's very cynical, and it is queer baiting, and it is there to sell comics to literally no one, because Batgirl has been bisexual since the 80s, and no one has a problem with that. And it's not queer, creepy straight dude, like, yeah, get it on, lesbians. It's none of that creepy nonsense.
That's just who she is.
It's who she is. It's well written. People accept it, and they don't care.
Well, let us know what you're reading. And and
Rogue
watching.
Is trans in one universe.
Oh wow,
Rogue
kind of neat.
Changed genders in one universe. Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Anyways, we have run out of time. My name has been Luke Smith,
and I have been Sebastian,
and we are playing out with Pistol and Rye, great sounding song, by
Vic Horvath.
Vic Horvath.
This was that charming.
This is a bit more country, not country, folksy. A bit more low-key than the rock ones that we had earlier. We've played Vic Horvath before as well, but I really like this track.
Yeah.
And we will be back, we won't be back right after this.
We'll be back next week. Next week, yeah.
So, excellent. With details on the Eurovision Zoom party. So keep your ear out for that.
All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. Coming around, as long as you-
the ride.